welcome to a half hour of Mind Webs. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction.
This is Michael Hansen. The Mind Web story this time is titled Rust. Written by Joseph E. Kellyham. The original copyright date was 1939 by Street and Smith. The sun, rising over the hills, cast long shadows across the patches of snow and bathed the crumbling ruins in the pale light. Had men been there, they could have reckoned the month to be August. But men had gone long since, and the sun had waned. And now, in this late period of the Earth's age, the short spring was awakening. Within the broken city, in a mighty columned hall that still supported a part of a roof, life of a sort was stirring. Three grotesque creatures were moving, their limbs creaking dolefully. X-120 faced the new day and the new spring with a feeling of exhilaration that nearly drove the age-old loneliness and emptiness from the corroded metal of what might be called his brain. The sun was the source of his energy, even as it had been the source of the fleshly life before him. And with the sun's reappearance, he felt new strength coursing through the wires and coils and gears of his complex body. He and his companions were highly developed robots, the last ever to be made by the Earthmen. X-120 consisted of a globe of metal, 8 feet in diameter, mounted upon four many-jointed legs. At the top of this globe was a protuberance like a Kaiser's helmet, which caught and stored the power from the rays of the sun. From the face of the globe, two ghostly quartz eyes bulged. The globe was divided by a heavy band of metal at its middle, and from this band, at each side, extended a long arm ending in a powerful claw. This claw was like the pincers of a lobster and had been built to shear through metal. Four long cables, which served as auxiliary arms, were drawn up like springs against the body. X-120 stepped from the shadows of the broken hall into the ruined street. The sun's rays striking against his tarnished sides sent new strength coursing through his body. He had forgotten how many springs he had seen. Many generations of twisted oaks that grew among the ruins had sprung up and fallen since X-120 and his companions had been made. Countless hundreds of springs had flitted across the dying earth since the laughter and dreams and follies of men had ceased to disturb those crumbling walls. His companions lumbered into the sunlight. G3A had lost one leg and moved slowly and with difficulty. The steel of his body was nearly covered with red rust, and the copper and aluminum alloys that completed his makeup were pitted with deep stains of greenish black. L-1716 was not so badly tarnished, but he had lost one arm, and the four auxiliary cables were broken and dangled from his sides like trailing wires. Of the three, X-120 was the best preserved. He still had the use of all his limbs, and here and there on his body shone the gleam of untarnished metal. His masters had made him well. The crippled G3A looked about him and whined like an old, old man.
"It will surely rain. I cannot stand another rain."
"Nonsense," said L-1716, his broken arm scraping along the ground as he moved. "There is not a cloud in the sky. I already feel better."
G3A looked about him in fear.
"And Are we all here? Last winter there were 12.
X-120 had been thinking of the other 9, all that had been left of the countless horde that men had once fashioned.
The 9 were to winter in the Jade Tower,
he explained.
We will go there. Perhaps they do not think it is time to venture out.
I cannot leave my work,
grated G3A.
There is so little time left. I have almost reached the goal.
His whining voice was raised to a pitch of triumph.
Soon I shall make living robots, even as men made us.
The old story,
sighed L-1716.
How long have we been working to make robots that will take our places? And what have we made? Usually nothing but lifeless blobs of steel. Sometimes we've fashioned mad things that had to be destroyed. But never in all the years have we made a single robot that resembled ourselves.
X-120 stood in the broken street, and the sunlight made a shimmering over his rust-dappled sides.
That is where we have failed,
he mused as he looked at his claw-like arms.
We have tried to make robots like ourselves. Men did not make us for life. They fashioned us for death.
He waved his huge lobster claw in the air.
What was this made for? Was it made for the shaping of other robots? Was it made to fashion anything? Blades like that were made for slaughter, nothing else.
Even so, I've nearly succeeded. With help, I can.
And have we ever refused help?
Snapped L-1716.
You are getting old, G3A. All winter you've worked in that little dark room, never allowing us to enter.
There was a metallic cackle in G3A's voice.
But I have nearly won. They said I wouldn't, but I have nearly won. I need help. One more operation. If it succeeds, the robots may yet rebuild the world.
Reluctantly, X-120 followed the two back into the shadowy ruins. It was dark in there, but their round, glassy eyes had been made for both day and night.
See?
Squeaked old G3A as he pointed to a metal skeleton upon the floor.
I've made a robot from parts that I took from this scrap heap. It is perfect, all but the brain. Still, I believe this will work.
He motioned to a gleaming object upon a littered table. It was a huge copper sphere with two black squares of a tar-like substance set in it. At the pole opposite from these squares was a protuberance no larger than a man's fist.
This is the only perfect brain that I could find. You see, I am not trying to create something. I am merely rebuilding. Those are the sensory organs. The visions from the eyes are flashed upon these as though they were screens. Beyond those eyes is the response mechanism. Thousands and thousands of photoelectric cells. Men made it so this would react mechanically to certain images. Movement, the simple avoidance of objects, the urge to kill, these are directed by the copper sphere. Beyond this,
he gestured to the bulge at the back of the brain,
is the thought mechanism. It is what made us different from other machines. So it is. I have finished now. See, this must be fitted into the body like this. The black squares rest behind the eyes. The wire brings energy to the brain, and those coils are connected to the power unit, which operates the arms and legs. That wire goes to the balancing mechanism.
He droned on, explaining each part carefully.
And now someone must connect it. I cannot.
L-1716 stared at his one rusty claw with confusion. Then both he and G3A
We're looking at X-120.
I can only try,
offered the robot.
But remember what I said. We were not fashioned to make anything, only to kill.
Clumsily, he lifted the copper sphere and its cluster of wires from the table. He worked slowly and carefully. One by one, the huge claws crimped the tiny wires together. The job was nearly finished. Then, the great pincers, hovering so carefully above the last wire, came into contact with another. There was a flash as the power short-circuited. X-120 reeled back. The copper sphere melted and ran before their eyes. X-120 huddled against the far wall.
It is as I said. We can build nothing. We were not made to work in anything. We were only made for one purpose. To kill.
Do not take on so,
pacified old G3A.
Perhaps it is just as well. We are things of steel, and the world seems to be made for creatures of flesh and blood. Little puny things that even I can crush. Still, that thing there.
He pointed to the metal skeleton which now held the molten copper like a crucible.
That was my last hope. I have nothing else to offer.
Both of you tried,
agreed L-1716.
No one could blame either of you. Sometimes of nights when I look into the stars, it seems that I see our doom written there. And I hear the worlds laughing at us. We've conquered the Earth, but what of it? We're going now, following the men who fashioned us.
Perhaps it is better,
nodded X-120.
I think it is the fault of our brains. You said that men made us to react mechanically to certain stimuli. And though they gave us a thought mechanism that has no control over our reactions, I never wanted to kill, yet I have killed many men things. And sometimes, even as I killed, I would be thinking of other things. I would not even know what had happened until after the deed was done.
G3A had not been listening. Instead, he had been looking dolefully at the metal ruin upon the floor.
There was one in the Jade Tower who thought he had nearly learned how to make a brain. He was to work all winter on it. Perhaps he has succeeded.
I will go there,
said L-1716, laconically. But even as they left the time-worn hall, G3A looked back ruefully at the smoking wreckage upon the floor. X-120 slowed his steps to match the feeble gait of G3A. Within sight of the tower, he saw that they need go no farther. At some time during the winter, the old walls had buckled. The nine were buried beneath tons and tons of masonry. Slowly, the three came back to the broken hall.
I will not stay out any longer,
grumbled G3A.
I am very old. I am very tired.
He crept back into the shadows. L-1716 stood looking after him.
I'm afraid that he's nearly done. The rust must be within him now. He saved me once long ago when we destroyed this city.
Do you think of that? Sometimes it troubles me. Men were our masters.
And they have made us as we are. It was not our doing. We have talked of it before, you know. We were machines made to kill.
But we were made to kill the little men in the yellow uniforms.
Yes, I know. They made us on the psychological principle of stimulus response. We had only to see a man in a yellow uniform, and our next act was to kill. Then after the Great War was over, or even before it was over, the stimulus and response had overpowered us all. It was only a short step from killing men in yellow uniforms to killing all men.
I know,
said X-120 wearily.
When there were more of us, I heard it explained often. But sometimes it troubles me.
It is all done now. Ages ago it was done. You are different, X-120. I have felt for long that there is something different about you. You were one of the last they made. Still, you were here when we took this city. You fought well, killing many.
X-120 sighed.
Yeah, they were small men things then. They seemed so soft and harmless. Did we do right?
Nonsense. We could not help it. We were made so. Men learned to make more than they could control. Why, if I saw a man today, crippled as I am, I would kill him without thinking.
L-1716,
whispered X-120.
Do you think there are any men left in the world?
I don't think so. Remember, the Great War was general, not local. We were carried to all parts of the Earth, even to the smallest islands. The Robots Rebellion came everywhere at almost the same time. There were some of us who were equipped with radios. Those died first, long ago, but they talked with nearly every part of the world. But, well, I worry now. It's spring. Men made us for killing men. That was their crime. Can we help it if they made us too well?
Yes,
agreed X-120.
It is spring. We will forget. Let's go toward the river. It was always peaceful and beautiful there.
L-1716 was puzzled.
What peace and beauty? They are but words that men taught us. I have never known them, but perhaps you have. You were always different.
I do not know what peace and beauty are, but when I think of them, I am reminded of the river. And of... well...
X-120 stopped suddenly, careful that he might not give away a secret he had kept so long.
Very well,
said L-1716.
We will go to the river. I know a meadow there where the sun always seemed warmer.
The two machines, each over 12 feet high, lumbered down the almost obliterated street. As they pushed their way over the debris and undergrowth that had settled about the ruins, they came upon many rusted skeletons of things that had once been like themselves. And toward the outskirts of the city, they crossed over an immense scrap heap where thousands of the shattered and rusted bodies lay. They came at last to an open space in the trees. Farther they went and stood at the edge of a bluff overlooking the gorge and a swirling river below. Several bridges had once been there, but only traces remained.
I think I will go down to the river's edge,
offered X-120.
Go ahead. I'll stay here. The way is too steep for me.
So X-120 clambered down the half-obliterated roadway alone. He stood at last by the rushing waters. Here, he thought, was something that changed the least. Here was the only hint of permanence in all the world. But even it changed. Soon the melting snow would be gone, and the waters would dwindle to a mere trickle. He turned about and looked at the steep side of the gorge. Except for the single space where the old roadbed crept down, the sides rose sheer, their crests framed against the blue sky. These cliffs, too, were lasting. Even in spring, the cliffs and river seemed lonely and desolate. Men had not bothered to teach X-20 much of religion or philosophy, but somewhere in the combination of cells in his brain was a thought which kept telling him that he and his kind were suffering for their sins and for the sins of men before them. And perhaps the thought was true. Certainly, men had never conquered their age-old stupidity, though science had bowed before them. Countless wars had taken more from men than science had given them. X-120 and his kind were the culmination of this primal killer instinct. In the haste of a war-pressed emergency, man had not taken the time to refine his last creation or to calculate its result. And with that misstep, man had played his last card on the worn gaming table of Earth.
That built-in urge to kill men in yellow uniforms had changed ever so slightly to an urge to kill men. Now there were only X-120, his two crippled comrades, the heaps of rusted steel, and the leaning, crumbling towers. They lumbered onward. A few birds were stirring. Suddenly, almost at his feet, a rabbit darted from the bushes, and X-120's long, jointed arms swung swiftly. The tiny animal lay crushed upon the ground. Instinctively, he stamped upon it, leaving only a bloody trace upon the new grass. Then remorse and shame stole over him. He went on silently. Somehow the luster of the day had faded for him. He did not want to kill. Always he was ashamed after the deed was done. And the age-old question went once more through the steel meshes of his mind. Why had he been made to kill? He went on and on, and out of long habit, he went furtively. Soon he came to an ivy-covered wall. Beyond this were the ruins of a great stone house. He stopped at what had once been a garden. Near a broken fountain, he found what he had been seeking. A little marble statue of a child, weathered and discolored. Here, unknown to his companions, he had been coming for years upon countless years. There was something about this little sculpturing that had fascinated him, and he had been half ashamed of his fascination. He could not have explained his feelings, but there was something about the statue that made him think of all the things that men had possessed. It reminded him of all the qualities that were so far beyond his kind. He stood looking at the statue for a long time. It possessed an ethereal quality that even defied time. It made him think of the river and of the overhanging cliffs. Some long dead artist almost came to life before his quartz eyes. He retreated to a nearby brook and came back with a huge ball of clay. This, in spite of the century-old admonitions that all robots should avoid the damp. For many years he had been trying to duplicate the little statue. Now, once more, he set about his appointed task. But his shear-like claws had been made for only one thing, death. He worked clumsily. Toward sundown, he abandoned the shapeless mass that he had fashioned and returned to the ruins. Near the shattered hall, he met L-1716. At the entrance, they called to G-3A, telling him of the day's adventures, but no answer came. Together, they went in. G-3A was sprawled upon the floor. The rust had conquered. The elusive spring had changed into an even more furtive summer. The two robots were coming back to their hall on an afternoon which had been beautiful and quiet. L-1716 moved more slowly now. His broken cables trailed behind him, making a rustling sound in the dried leaves that had fallen. Two of the cables had become entangled. Unnoticed, they caught in the branches of a fallen tree. Suddenly, L-1716 was whirled around. He sagged to his knees. X-120 removed the cables from the tree, but L-1716 did not get up. A thin tendril of smoke curled from his side. Slowly he crumpled. From within him came a whirring sound that ended in a sharp snap. Tiny flames burst through his metal sides, and L-1716 fell forward. And X-120 stood over him and begged,
"Please, old friend, don't leave me now."
It was the first time that the onlooking hills had seen any emotion in centuries. A few flakes of snow were falling through the air. The sky looked gray and low.
pair of crows were going home, their raucous cries troubling an otherwise dead world. X-120 moved slowly. All that day, he had felt strange. He found himself straying from the trail. He could only move now by going in a series of arcs. Something was wrong within him. He should be back in the hall, he knew, and not out in this dangerous moisture. But he was troubled, and all day he had wondered while the snowflakes had fallen intermittently about him. On he went through the gray, chill day. On and on, until he came to a crumbling wall covered with withered ivy. Over this he went into a ruined garden and paused at a broken fountain before an old and blackened statue. Long he stood looking down at the carving of a little child, a statue that men had made so long before. Then his metal arm swung through the air, the marble shivered into 100 fragments. Slowly, he turned about and retraced his steps. The cold sun was sinking, leaving a faint amethyst stain in the west. He must get back to the hall, must not stay out in the wet, he thought. But something was wrong. He caught himself straying from the path, floundering in circles. The light was paling, although his eyes had been fashioned for both day and night. Where was he? He realized with a start that he was lying on the ground. He must get back to the hall. He struggled, but no movement came. Then, slowly, the light faded and flickered out. And the snow fell, slowly and silently, until only a white mound showed where X-120 had been. That story, titled Rust, was written by Joseph E. Kellyam. Copyright 1939 by Street and Smith. This is Michael Hansen speaking. Technical production for this episode of MindWebs by Darkman. This is a special production of MindWebs by WMSE 91.7 FM, Milwaukee.